I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 104 of Digital Divination, and Jason's back, but he's in a different undisclosed location.
That's correct. I'm coming to you live from my underground bunker. Ignore the fact that there's a window over
there. There's a huge window right there. It's the least underground.
It's underground. Bunker. Look, if you were to open that shade, it would be just nothing but packed earth.
Yes. And stone, yes. So you made it safely for your move, I guess, then.
That is correct. I've completely moved. I've moved in. I've set up some lovely bookshelves behind me now. I've got basically my own office to work and game and podcast from.
Nice. Nice. Excellent. Welcome. Welcome to the office club.
Yeah. It's great.
That's true. Mine is like I don't know if I mentioned, it's like a writer's garret. It's above our garage. So I can't go to work without leaving the house. Like if the weather's bad, okay. I will get wet.
Yeah.
Walking up to the side door above my garage.
I always thought that would be nice, you know, because it's separate enough, far enough away, but like you have that short little jaunt across the roof into the house there.
Right. It's just far enough to be nice if like, you know, the kids are looking for a parent. They will go find my wife, not me, because I'm too far. But it's far enough that if I have to go to the bathroom, I have to like put my shoes back on and go back into the house.
No, that's no good.
Yeah, my office, having moved over here, I'm now adjacent to the bathroom rather than a stairway up and down from the bathroom where I was before. So,
yeah, it was kind of video game level looking before, right? You know, where you've got where you're trying to run and suddenly there's stairs that go down and a landing, and the stairs that go up again.
It's like, I had to decide, is it worth going down and up or just down and down to the downstairs bathroom, you know?
So. Then you got to go back up.
Then I got to go back up again. Yeah, but I still up and down. Anyway, before we get started, Ron.
Yes, I am an employee of Wizards of the Coast and my opinions are mine and not theirs. Thank you.
All right. So, first of all, Jason.
What's up?
Congratulations. You have a new title.
That's true. That also happened around the same time as the move. I think actually I don't know if it was the Monday before or the Monday after. Mm-hmm. I was officially title changed. It's not a promotion. It's kind of a sideways move. I am now a senior designer on the Rules and Lore team. This is basically to reflect the work that I had been doing since they hired me as senior developer. It was a lot of just sort of pitching in on, you know, the RPG hardcovers and working a little bit on the remaster, the second half of the remaster, and kind of basically doing what is considered a Paizo design work, which we'll get to in today's episode. So this was a formality at best.
I see.
When they hired me, they were asking, like, do you want to be a designer or do you want to be a developer? And I really considered my skill set to be kind of more in the development phase, but at Paizo the difference between developer and designer is kind of razor thin, honestly.
What is that difference?
Well, let's get into it right now, shall we? A lot of it is kind of dependent on what your book line you're working on, right? In a weird way, sort of one way to do it is that developers kind of generally work on like the adventure lines and the Lost Omens lines, whereas the designers are mostly at work on the RPG rule books lines. I think the main difference, I would say, if I had to nail it down, is that the designers get to make new toys, where the developers get to make new things with the existing toys. Right. To play with the existing toys in unique ways. They're allowed, you know, they're allowed. They're sort of empowered to use the systems of say Pathfinder to you know, make a new kind of subsystem, like a circus management subsystem, for instance, right? A designer is going to be able to make a new class, right? Developer can make a new archetype, which uses existing architecture known, right? You know, we know what an archetype looks like. It does this, you have it around. Maybe it starts at second level and has feats, at the normal class levels, right? But a designer will be able to is the only one empowered to make a new whole class from scratch.
Right. Now, how many designers are there on the Pathfinder team now?
That's a good question. Let me count them in my head. 1, 2, 3. Wait. Is that right? Okay. So 4 plus, I would say. I would even maybe go so far as to say 5, including me. Mike Sayers
That's 4 plus.
Yes. Well, Mike Sayers is our manager. Right. So he's got his normally sort of split between management duties and design duties. But he's still doing design work. He's still, working on the books and stuff like that. So that was kind of. And then there's Bowman, who is the sort of like overarching leader of the rules. I don't know what is game development or something like that, I think is his title or something. So he's also
a designer. It's still game development.
Yes, and I guess so. But he also sort of works on the big picture stuff and works with now Joe Pacini on sort of like board games and card games and stuff like that. So he is. But he pitches in to give his opinions on things. But I think rarely is he going to get into the nitty gritty of making a new class from scratch, right? Like the everyday nitty gritties of stuff. And then you got that all includes, of course, Logan Bonner, who's our lead designer, who is kind of basically the go to the end stop of for new rules stuff. He's
cool. Yeah. And now Ron is a designer.
I'm a designer, game designer.
Game designer for Dungeons and Dragons. How does that differ?
We don't have developers.
You don't develop anything?
On Dungeons and Dragons. Man, we develop a lot of stuff. Less so. Maybe not so much. The way we've got it broken down is there's about a dozen of us on the team, and apart from the two sort of game architects that are responsible for everything from, all of the products that we put out for the tabletop game. There are designers and then senior designers. Senior designers will take ownership of books. They do what developers do at Paizo. That is to say, this is my book. I'm going to assign it to freelancers as I need. And I'm going to take the text that freelancers give back, and I'm going to fit it to our standards, to our styles, to make it one voice throughout the entire product, etc. And the game designers underneath the senior designers, which is where I am, we don't do that. We don't lead products, but we spend a lot of our time being the people that the senior designers work with to get their products done. That is to say, stuff doesn't go outside for freelancing nearly as much as it does at Paizo. When I was there at Paizo, a lot of it is just done inside. So it'll be like somebody's leading a book, and they're looking to other people within the department to do the writing. And that makes it really easy to collaborate with who's doing what in what area. And that doesn't mean all of us designers are only ever helping the seniors. Sometimes senior designers will work for other senior designers as well. And I've been there going on 2 years now. There's only one senior designer that I haven't worked with as a lead on a book, but that senior designer I have worked with as a fellow writer on other books. So I feel like I've gotten to work very collaboratively with everybody. And that's really nice. One of the things that we develop whenever anybody talks about development, it's not even a thing like designing. It's more like production, right? It's you're the person who's responsible for setting the schedules and laying out, kind of producer activities. I will say within the design group, there are some of us, and I'm one of them, who is more specialized in the mechanical design than narrative design. Given a product, I am less likely to be, hey, write this, you know, these, you know, 20,000 narrative words, and more likely to be, hey, do all the monster and magic item stat blocks, or, you know, double check all the monster and magic item stat blocks that we did, and go through those. So that kind of mechanical work I find a lot of my time doing. It's exact. It's a lot of the kind of stuff that would be called design work at Paizo. So if I were to translate the two, I don't do much development. I do mostly design and freelancing. Freelancing. So
right, yeah.
Well, so that's interesting. And I remember not that long ago, I guess it's been a couple of years now, the development team, design team, all the they changed to this at Paizo to what, narrative and lore groups?
What happened? Yeah, what kind of happened was there was a development thing, silo, let's say, and a design silo.
Right.
And you know, like what Ron was saying, and I'm sure you know this, Ron. Like the, what we do, we each of those groups of people would take text that we get from freelancers, polish it up, you know, and check things here and there, and some people will be checking more like, does this adventure make sense, and some people would be checking do these mechanics work, for the most part. And then also there was the Starfinder kind of silo, which was sort of separate, but sort of worked on the same way in a sort of a microcosm. But then, like, yeah, about a year, and a half ago or something like that. But did this happen while you were there, Ron, or did it happen shortly after you left?
No, I don't. I certainly don't want to swoop in and take credit, but it was one of the last things I was working at, like, talking about restructuring. Hey, here's more sensible way to structure how we get stuff done around here.
I remember that. We were kind of figuring things out and trying to
work. Yeah, you were with it. Yeah, we were walking through, and you were one of the people talking about what would make good sense from.
Should there be a Starfinder team?
Yeah, exactly.
Or should it be, could, you know, like what it is now, essentially, is there's still a Starfinder team. But outside of the Starfinder team, there is a narrative team, which works on all the adventures and the scenarios and modules and stuff like that. And then there's the rules and lore team, which work on the Lost Omens books and the sort of core RPG books, right? The main sort of RPG books. Now, that means I'm basically on the team with like Luis and Eleanor and Landon, who are working on the Lost Omens books, and we all sort of chat together. Now, what happens often is that nowadays is that there is a design liaison sort of assigned to different non-core RPG books, right? So a Lost Omens book will get a design, I guess they might be calling it a design lead. They don't necessarily run the book like they would in the past, getting all the freelancers. That's up to the development lead. And so the design lead will come in and be like, swooping, like, oh, yeah, look at the outline ahead of time. Like, hey, this archetype you think might not work the way you want or whatever. I mean, let's keep an eye on this, make sure it's all going to work. And then probably come in and do a pass on the rule stuff, right? And I believe, on the flip side kind of happens. On the RPG core rule books, there is a development lead that's brought in from the rules and from the rules and lore team, because it's still going to be lore based. And I'm sure there would probably be, if there were any adventures in a book, maybe someone from the narrative would take a peek as well. But, you know, someone's going to come in, like maybe Luis or maybe Eleanor, to look at all the lore stuff that's in an RPG book. I keep calling them RPG books. I don't know what to call them. They're obviously all RPG books, but like the line is, I think it's just called Pathfinder RPG. You know, it's just that line in the RPG line books. They'll come in and make sure, oh, wait, no, we were going to say that, you know, this part of the world is not that way anymore. We need to make sure it's in standard with the setting as it is currently, right?
That's an interesting breakdown, because it the way you've described it, in my mind, it's sort of a different axis than what you were talking about before, where if you've got, all right, well, designers build the new toys, and developers get to experiment and play within the toys that already exist. You know, you talked about that earlier. This one seems to get like the rules and the lore team is going to be like, we're going to build the world. and the rules that are behind it. And then the narrative team gets to play with all those toys, right? They're like, oh, well, now that the lore team has talked all about Nex and Geb, here is a narrative team. We're going to do a bunch of adventure set in Geb and maybe an adventure path set in Nex or whatever, right? Because the toys have been built. We just get to play with them on the narrative side.
That's one way to see and a lot of times that might be even happening together simultaneously, right? You know, a book about the Mwangi Expanse might be being made at the same time as a Mwangi Expanse adventure path, says someone else in this chat might know about. So it's all to say that there's a lot of back and forth, a lot of melding of between, which is why basically sort of like I came in as a developer and now I'm a designer. A lot of the work is not that much different, right? You know, one way or the other. The day to day getting stuff done, you know, designers will lead a book, go get freelancers to write some stuff. Developers will lead a book, go get freelancers to write some stuff, and then work on it. Like if you get down to like the brass tacks, just to sort of boil it down to its very simplistic terms, we do the same work in a lot of ways.
Right, right. And so now I'm thinking back on a lot of the projects I've worked on. So I've worked on a lot of hardcovers, and and I know a lot of the leads were designers, but some of them I thought were developers. So now I don't really know. And I've worked adventures, and those were all developers I know that we're working
on. And there was a sort of a concerted effort with Second Edition that a member of the design team, now the Rules and Lore team, look at even the stuff that's in the back of the adventures that say, oh, here's the new archetype, here's the adventure. And let's sort of give that a quick sniff test to make sure that it's all, you know, on the up and up.
Now, Starfinder is like you mentioned, is kind of a microcosm of this.
Yeah.
And even before, it was still much smaller than the Pathfinder Second Edition team. And is remastered come about that I think has grown the Pathfinder team. Seems like Starfinder team has stayed fairly small, even so. Do they have the same distinction, or is Thirsty the only designer, or how does that work?
I think Thirsty is technical because Thirsty's a manager. He's kind of has a manager title. And Joe Bassini used to be the Starfinder lead designer. Right. At the moment, there's it's at the moment everyone's doing everything over there. I think
a lot of
pitching in to work on the playtests and what's going to be Second Edition. Some of occasionally, I think Bullman and maybe Logan, some other people might be looking in, you know, sort of checking those rules to see how they stand up to the 2E, you know, the Pathfinder rules, and make sure that they are compatible and they're not doing, and they're doing different enough things, right? So that they are going to be, different games, right? Not just Starfinder's not just going to be Pathfinder with a kind of a vague, you know, coat of paint on it. I almost said skin of paint, which is where my mind is. And so everyone is kind of doing a little bit of everything, you know, working on the adventures that are coming out for the playtest, doing the society stuff as well. So it's basically a microcosm, but it's also even more of a blending. I don't know whether or not how that's going to shake out in the future when Starfinder Second Edition is fully out, if it's going to go back, you know, sort of separate Kurds and Way to be you know, more people who are working only on adventures and people who are only working on the hardcover and lore books, which is basically what it was, you know, before. It was
right.
Myself and maybe Tondro doing adventures, and John and Owen and Joe and other people sort of working on the sort of hardcover line, which at that point was also too rules and lore kind of mushed together. Every book had rules and lore in it. So there was never any lost, you know, we didn't have a Lost Omens line. Whether or not it's possible that there will be a line like that in Starfinder in the future. I don't know. Or if I do know, I'm not going to say. it's very much, you know, that might occur, and that there might be a person who is the, because Thirsty's still the Starfinder kind of creative managing director. I forget what order those words in his title come in, but while we have the creative director on the narrative side, we have a creative director on the rules and lore side, and then basically I guess Bowman kind of counts as the sort of creative director of the rulesy stuff. Whether or not there's going to be anybody else who is also going to be considered to be a creative director, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Promoted to that sort of level mm-hmm. of, maybe Thirsty will look after the lore of things and someone's going to be a creative director of narrative on Starfinder. I don't know. I think the team would need to grow a bit for that to happen, but that doesn't mean it's not possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which would mean products need to be sort of reasonably anticipated for it and, planned out.
So Ron, at Wizards, you all are doing kind of a refresh of fifth edition.
Of the rules, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, that's an all-hands effort, or is there a sub-team of designers focusing on that?
Oh boy, is it an all-hands effort. it is such an all-hands effort that I have been told multiple times, hey, to the extent you've got any conflict between prioritization, between the new rules, or literally anything else, mm-hmm. prioritize the new rules. We'll get everything else sort of cleaned up afterward. That's going to be a lot of like I mentioned that I do a lot of mechanical work. A lot of my mechanical work has now for weeks, months has been specifically oriented towards the rules refresh we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we're actually at the point now where I'm working on unannounced things that are just after that. But at any moment I get sort of pulled back into, give a mechanical pass on this, give a development pass on some text to make sure that it's going to fit well into the rules refresh.
Interesting. And so Jason, with the remastered system coming out, being out now, and then the books, all the subsequent books are all going to fall within remastered.
That's right.
So that means there's going to have to be this kind of similar scrutiny paid to like everything coming out to make sure not only does it kind of fit with second edition, but now the remastered version of it.
Yeah, and, indeed. That's something we're looking at. There were books that were on the schedule.
Right. We
decided to do the master that got maybe 50, 70, even, somewhere in the percentage of being done needed to kind of go back in to, open it up and remaster some stuff here and there and be like, oh, we have to take that out. We have to, so that's been, mm-hmm. like Ron said, sort of like stuff that's been sort of prioritized was just getting the remaster out. Now we're kind of coming back and we get it getting that Howl of the Wild book, which is coming out very soon,
right?
Done in such a way that it fits into the remaster sort of. And it's sort of interesting that they that we've done Rage of Elements kind of came out before, but it's kind of remastered, so right. because we knew what some of the terms were going to change to be and all that kind of stuff. So that one kind of is grandfathered in, I would say.
Right. And there's two books coming out for the Tian Che area. And both of those were actually started well before the whole remaster discussion came out. And they might have been pretty close to being done by the time, just timing wise. But they were pushed back, I'm presuming, to do the same thing too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're going to be all, everything that comes out now that's post player core and GM core is remaster. With the exception of perhaps maybe some adventure stuff. I'm not sure where that line is going to be drawn. We're coming up hot on AP number 200.
Right. Yes.
I don't know for sure if that one is getting the remaster treatment and will be the first, or we're going to start with 201 and then go from there.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they've said. I think that they've already announced the Wardens of Wildwood is a three-part mm-hmm. after the number 200, and then the three part after that is the high level curtain call. And mm-hmm. I don't know if either of those are Wardens of Wildwood. I think they've said is not, it's remaster, but not orc. It's OGL, not orc.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, curtain call is the same. I don't know if they said one way or the other about curtain call.
I don't remember either,
but it's fact that we don't know shows just how on the cusp of it this is. Right.
Yeah. It's all going through the machine, yep. basically.
Now, how challenging is that for both of you to be working on projects that are, well, I guess you're doing what you're, as designers, you don't have to worry about the old system at all then. That's all the narrative folks. Is that right?
A little bit. I mean, I would say that what we have to do is make, there's some stuff, like I spent a chunk of time looking at old yes. stuff and seeing, like, that's why there's some errata for Dark Archive and a little bit for Secrets of Magic, that sort of like, oh, this is rules little stuff you can still use, and here's how to use it in the meantime, to say like, oh, well, this spell, you know, whatever it is, Burning Hands? Produce Flame. Produce Flame is not the cantrip anymore. The cantrip is called Ignition, so let's, you know, and then like the difference between Ray of Frost and Frostbite is one of them is an attack spell and one of them is not, and then so the psychic class had to get a little tweaking here and there because it used right. some of those cantrips. But otherwise, you know, so it still plays exactly the same because the chassis of 2A is still the same, obviously, right?
Right. So if something wasn't updated for remastered, it basically is still the same going forward then.
I mean, yeah, as much as you can do. Yeah, that's why we put out the sort of like arcane cascade errata for Magus because that sort of said, try directly into spell schools. It was the one of the few minor things that tied directly into spell schools. And now that we've gotten rid of those, hey, how does this work? We want you to still be able to play your Magus. And now from here on, you know, if you pick up a spell for your Magus, you know, two books down the line, it's not going to have a spell school in it, obviously, you know, so you need to be able to know how to use that ability. So we errated some stuff. There might be, you know, it's been some talk about errating some other stuff in the future. Well, no, there's a lot of like, how much is it, you know, worth it? How much is it going to be, you know, because we have like, you know, took all the APG stuff with the classes and kind of remixed them into the player core and player core two and which one's going where and whatever. There might be some other, you know, chances to do that stuff, but also like we want to put out, we're putting out new stuff. You know, there's the exemplar and the animist, which was play tested last year. You know, what's that? You know, we want to put out more new classes, right? And more archetypes and new stuff as well.
And similarly, Ron, with the rules refresh that's going on with Wizards, the things that don't change then, like, you know, I'm playing in a campaign where we're using some of the proposed rules and things to test them out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that have been released from the Unearthed Arcana.
The ones that have been released already, right? Now, makes things pretty cool in some areas, but then the things that haven't changed with that, you know, spells or abilities, feats or whatever, they all stay the same. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that puts us in something of a middle ground here that requires some pretty consistent vigilance in order to navigate, because we have because everything that we've done is being designed to work with the everything we've done in the past, like products that are going to be coming out between now and the new player's handbook are going to be designed to work with the new rules very seamlessly. We still have to pay attention to what are some of the specific things, you know, what if somebody's using, you know, this version of spirit, the version of spiritual weapon that has been in the rules for 10 years versus the one that was in the Unearthed Arcana, compare that to what the current draft is for what we're going to be. I mean, there's a lot of things to keep balancing in your head. And sometimes I get really baffled by stuff because I get used to the styles and things like that.
Right.
And, like one of the things that we've moved towards is some more precise language about describing conditions, right? Somebody isn't knocked prone. They have the prone condition because that we want to let you know, hey, prone is a thing. It's a rules item you need to go look at. So we say, I have the prone condition. And so I'll see stuff where it's like, knocked prone. I'm like, oh no, that's wrong. Wait, is it wrong yet?
Is it wrong? Oh my God.
Yeah. At what point does that become wrong? Right.
Oh man. So it sounds like for both of you, it's going to be really great whenever the new thing comes fully into being and you only have to think about one way then.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, just today, just this weekend, I'm working on some freelance for a third party who is when I agreed to do the freelance, this was like pre-remaster. And so it's like, well, you know, is this OGL? Is it Orc? It's still OGL. So I'm still thinking about ways things go, you know, for that. And so it's I don't get to necessarily forget Pathfinder Second Edition pre-remaster, at least until that's done. But after that, I can sort of make a clean break for the most part.
Yeah, I'm still playing a Pathfinder first edition game. I don't even forget those rules, right?
And I'm running Outlaws of Alkenstar, which I hope to finish, you know, within the next month or so, which is still obviously all written in pre-remaster. And I'm still, we haven't really like fully changed over, although Foundry does, you know, has changed all the names of the, you know, some of the names of the conditions and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, well, all right, does this work one way or this way? And I'm like, and then like playing in a game, you know, online that's still like, oh, I can't wait for you to try out the new Oracle, you know, but yeah, it's not out yet. It's not going to be out for a bit.
Yeah. Well, I'm running Fist of the Ruby Phoenix and I'm just sticking with the existing PF2E just to keep it simple for me and the players. Cause we have several people that are relatively new to the system, mm-hmm. and including myself, even though I've been playing second edition for several years, I'm not as conversant with it as I am with Starfinder. And for me right now, working on freelance stuff is tough enough for me to keep things straight. If I was GMing it that way too, it's like, oh man. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Abomination Vaults, which is also in the process of me, I'm running, and we're not even like halfway through. So I don't know what I'm going to, we're kind of halfway between again. It's sort of in a weird, straddling. Until all those classes come out, we can all move on to the next thing.
Right. Yeah, I'm running Strength of Thousands. And every now and again, I mean, it's kind of easy enough when somebody's like, why does this say off? If my enemy is off target, I'm like, oh, that's flat-footed, you know, same.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy enough to translate on the fly. Sometimes it gets a little bit sticky. I've got two of my players who have taken who are Red Mantis Assassins. Long story, but they're Red Mantis Assassins in that campaign. And the spells you get for the Red Mantis Assassin dedication are specific Wizard School spells. Yeah. And so... All right, for now, those continue to exist. We'll probably just keep those through the end of the campaign. Same thing you're doing with Fist of the Ruby Phoenix, John. Just, okay, we'll just do it how it was, and we'll keep it that way all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So bringing this back to Starfinder a little bit, you know, one of the things I'm really excited about is the second edition playtest coming out, being launched. I think it's officially coming out Gen Con, but I heard... Some of it's going to be run at Origins, which is in middle of June. Or at least there'll be some, maybe that's only demonstrations for GMs who are going to run it Gen Con. I'm not quite sure which.
I remember doing that for the first edition Starfinder release, doing demonstrations. The book was in the process of basically being done and yet, you know.
Right.
But it wasn't out yet.
Something that I talked to Jason about when he... was kind enough to give me, I don't know if you can see it on my shelf. Oh, it's way up there. Okay. So he gave me the special edition of the Scoured Stars Adventure Path and signed it.
Ooh.
It's a bright blue book, which is really kind of cool. I should get it down. I'll get it down.
Yeah, sure, I don't see it.
It's a beautiful book.
It's not on your visible shelf, but.
Yeah.
I mean, like you know, when I moved to, like, I thought like I would have to put some of my first edition stuff in a thing. Oh, look at it. Yeah,
that is very pretty.
It's really cool. Yeah. Nice shiny logo and stuff in there. The inside's the same, but the outside's kind of nice. But when I was talking to him, I mentioned that, I was really interested. I'm really kind of torn because I really wanted to get into the second edition playtest after August because I'll be running it a whole bunch at Gen Con. And then I was talking to Jason, really loved to give him a game. And he mentioned he would love to run it as well. Play it or run it.
I mean, I definitely do.
Really?
So
I'm not saying that I have maybe looked through it already, but membership has its privileges, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that maybe we might take a break in our Intrepid Heroes group, which we just started playing this, started recording, and maybe sometime over the summer run a playtest adventure, and maybe have our now further away living, but more available.
Well, that would be great. Well, Jason, I'll tell you the same thing that I told John when he was mentioning it. And that is, I'm getting around to a compliment, so bear with me. Man, I remember having to learn the Pathfinder Second Edition playtest rules and running a home group for the Pathfinder Second Edition playtest rules, and then how hard it was in my mind when the actual rules came out to try to forget what had been part of the playtest but wasn't in the regular rules, and to see what had been done. And I, at the time, I'm like, you know what? I don't work at the company anymore. Screw that. I'm not going to even touch the Starfinder Second Edition playtest and muddle my mind with things that I have to learn and or unlearn. I'll just wait for the regular rules to come out. And John's like, well, I'm thinking about running the playtest. I'm like, yeah, despite what I just said, I'd love playing it because I love playing with you, John, and Jason. I'd say the same. If you're doing it, I'll learn it and then go through the mental effort of unlearning what I need to when the actual system comes out, just because you're awesome.
I think, thank you. I think it's going to be a little easier to do the unlearning because Starfinder Second Edition being built on a foundation of the Pathfinder Second Edition solid rock, right? Like, at the, you know, Pathfinder Second Edition's coming out, it was still like transitions from First Edition, something that was kind of like, not completely different, but like a kind of a sea change in the way we thought about mechanics in a lot of ways. And you know, still a lot of people, I'm still like, you know, trying to, some players are like, well, that's First Edition. You kind of forget First Edition altogether.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you know, and trying some things out in the playtest for Pathfinder Second Edition, what, you know, what worked and what didn't work, and then changing it so that different. Starfinder being built on something that's a little more solid, you know, is going to be a little easier to kind of, I think what we're going to see is going to be not say the finished product. Obviously there's lots of questions and things that could change, but it's going to be a lot easier to just sort of like make the transition from the playtest to the full second edition.
Well, I'm hoping that a lot of the terminology from Pathfinder Second Edition just carries over, you know, in terms of conditions, effects, things like that, you know, that are consistent. You know,
oh, you mean like if a weapon is agile, then it's only -4 on the second attack instead of -5 or if,
Because they want everything to be as compatible as possible, you kind of like, you know, oh, it's not saying too much, but like, you can guarantee that stuff is going to be the same.
Well, yeah.
If it's got the same name, it's going to be the same. Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm hoping is those sorts of things. And that's one of the reasons why I've really tried to get more into second edition now. So that transition is a little bit easier for me because I really want to be writing second edition right off the bat as well. So, and another reason why I volunteered to run as soon as I could here at Gen Con. So
great.
Well, well, this has been fun. Talking, didn't really talk about what we normally talk about, you know, congratulating, Jason on at least a new title, if not new responsibilities, a new house, a new office. So that's all good.
And even if that's not actually your underground bunker, I'm going to believe that you additionally have an underground bunker.
Yes.
Even if you're not in it right now. I don't know. You don't.
You don't know. Yeah, I could have anything. I mean, I have a garage now.
Whoa. You've really hit the big time with the garage.
I know, right? I have a garage where I can keep stuff that I never have to look at.
Yes.
No offense to Ron. Ron, I'm sorry if that was triggering for you, living above a garage. I mean, not living, working above a garage.
I am sort of like middle-aged man enough that like sweeping out my garage is like so satisfying. It's so zen to be like, you know, get everything out, arrange everything in my garage just so, and sweep it all out and get it cleaned.
I've graduated to a handheld blower for my garage sweeping.
No, I mean, I know I'm still doing it the old push broom way.
Once you go with a power blower, man, you never go back.
I just turned 50. Is that like a 50-year-old guy thing that I?
Your power blower is in the mail, I think.
I think I know what you're getting for Christmas there, Ron. All right. Oh. Well, thanks again, gentlemen, for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you.
I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.